Good morning and welcome to the October 20th edition of Mountain Money. I'm your host, Roger Goldman. I'm here with my co-host, Kevin Kennedy, on a crisp fall morning here in Park City.
It was quite chilly. I ran into some ice here in the China Bridge garage. Go figure.
Well, we're going to cool things off by our show this morning. We're going to start by talking about phone and text scams with Sheriff Casey Bates and Sergeant Skylar Talbot of the Summit County Sheriff's Office.
And then we'll hear about gratitude from author and Park City local Joel Zuckerman. And we'll finish our show with Connor Darnborough, who's having the grand opening of Smart Fit Method this Wednesday, October 22nd. All this and more on Mountain Money. Stay tuned.
This is Captain Ken Jones, Summit County Sheriff's Department. Need you to give us a call back ASAP pertaining to an urgent legal matter.
One day I found that in my voicemail, and I wondered, was it really Captain Ken Jones? And if they were trying to get me on an urgent legal matter, why didn't I get a phone number to call back? What that in fact was, I take it, Casey Bates, was a scam.
Correct, Roger.
Okay.
Thank you for having us today. This is a very important topic. We would like to talk to everyone about it, inform everyone of what's out there and what not to do.
So we have in the studio with us Sheriff Casey Bates of Summit County and Skylar Talbot. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, scams. This was one variety of scam. There are other varieties that are very similar to this. Can you describe the kinds of calls that people get claiming that they've missed a court date or otherwise? And what are people trying to accomplish with those calls?
Yeah, you know, you just played an example of something that we see all of the time with the sheriff's office. You know, folks out there impersonating law enforcement, using scare tactics to try and get, you know, people to call them back. And while Ken Jones is a real person and is, in fact, a captain with the sheriff's office, I can tell you that that was absolutely not Ken Jones on your voicemail. So, yeah, we see it quite often. And like you mentioned, that's just the surface. There's so many types of scams out there.
And we're going to go into some other scams, but play this one out a little bit, because I was also received another one of these scam calls where the conversation went on, and what I needed to do was to, you know, come meet somebody somewhere. When I suggested the sheriff's office, they said that wouldn't be a good idea, that if I went there, I got arrested, which really made me suspicious. How do these things play out?
Yeah, exactly. So typically what happens is somebody places a phone call, so they'll spoof their number. So they'll actually make it look like they are calling from the sheriff's office. So, you know, you're sitting down at dinner, the sheriff's office phone number actually comes up on your phone. The person on the other end introduces themselves as a sheriff's office employee. You know, they go to our website or our social media. They find out, okay, is Captain Ken Jones a real person? Yes, he is. So they'll introduce themselves. You know, this is Captain Ken Jones, urgent legal matter. The first thing they want to do is just start that conversation. And as soon as you start to engage with them, they're going to use all sorts of you know, these scare tactics to eventually get you to, you know, whether it's paying in gift cards, we see people paying in Bitcoin. But it's that conversation that they're trying to start to sort of string you along.
How would one know if my phone says Summit County Sheriff's Office, I'm going to answer the phone, and then I'll know fairly quickly that it's a scam when they're asking for money? Would the Summit County Sheriff's Office call me, or wouldn't they just show up at my door and
we're certainly not.
Not my door. I mean, you know, anyone else.
What did you do?
That's the one thing that, all right, I'm out of here. Very important for people to know is we don't call. The sheriff's office doesn't call. The courts don't call. IRS doesn't call. They don't use telephone as a method of having something of payment. So what's important is to know that right off the bat, is that never happens and it doesn't happen. The way that we communicate are through the mail. And that's the most important thing. The IRS is the same way. Our courts are the same way. It's through the mail. The other thing is that's something that you need to be aware of and people need to be aware of is the urgency in the matter. They want you to think that you have to do it now or they're coming to get you. We don't operate like that. And that will never happen. So with any agency, not just Summit County, with any police agency. And they're going to do it to wherever you are. And they're going to use the police department or the sheriff's office. And they're going to use real people so that you can verify it it's not real. And that's the most important thing to remember is what you're hearing is what they want you to hear, but it's not real. And it's very important that you just hang up.
And I take it that from time to time, this is successful and you end up hearing about people who have bought hundreds of dollars of gift cards or other things.
Yeah.
It does happen.
It does, you know, and it's... I think this is a crime that's particularly frustrating in law enforcement because we don't hear about it until after it's happened. And the overwhelming majority of cases, there's not a whole lot that can be done after the fact. So educating people on what to look for, those red flags. Roger, you mentioned if you do get that call and you ask, hey, you know, I'll come down, I'll meet you at the sheriff's office. If they say no, That's a huge red flag that we probably shouldn't be dealing with that person. And that's something that, you know, folks can always do. If you're unsure, hang up, call the sheriff's office back. You know, if you call us, you know our number. If you call us, we're going to tell you 10 out of 10 times, yeah, that was a scam. Don't communicate with them.
Well, if they spoof the number, do I just hang up and then do a callback of that same number?
You can call that same number, or you can hang up and you know, go online, go to our sheriff's app, go to our, you know, our public numbers out there. Call us directly though, because again, and I think that is what gets a lot of people is they see that number. And you know, I've taken dozens and dozens of reports from people, and they'll tell me, well, it was you calling. Well, it wasn't. It looked like it was, but it was not.
So they could call, they could text, they could email, and all those are not ways that the IRS, FBI, Sheriff's Department, Park City Police, none of them use those methods.
No one's doing that. And, you know, I think one of the more common ones was, you know, hey, this is the sheriff's office. You've got a warrant. You need to pay it in gift cards. Well, the courts, they don't want Walmart gift cards.
Really? Yeah. Christmas time, you don't want to hand them out to the...
Believe it or not, they take cash. They take cash. And they want it at the courthouse. They're not out there collecting gift cards or Bitcoin. Anytime you're getting contacted, and that's the message is, hey, we want gift cards, we want Bitcoin. It's not legitimate.
Now, how do they get my number? How do they get my email?
Oh, it's all out there. We're in the day and age where all of our information, everyone in this room, all of our information's out there. And it's kind of scary how easy it is to get. And even just random phone numbers, right? Like, we don't have, you know, the old school phone books anymore, but there's websites that they just publish, hey, these are all the existing T-Mobile numbers. And you know, these people, these criminals operating a lot of times outside of the country. Very rarely are these individuals actually operating locally. We just don't see that. Usually it's usually always out of the state, but a lot of times out of the country, and just randomly calling numbers and hoping, you know, it's that phishing scheme. They get one person and it kind of devolves into someone losing a lot of money.
Okay, that's scam one. Let's talk about some of the other kinds of scams that you guys see here in Summit County.
Well, I think everyone knows about the text messaging scams that are happening. We'll have different types of text messages where it's just the random text, can't meet today, can you meet tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Have you gotten those? Yes. Yeah. Or
those four.
Or sorry, I'll call you back, yeah. Or something like that. Those are what we call romance scams. So these are very interesting scams. These romance scams are, they want you to engage with them, and then they will start building a relationship with you. And if I guess this is twofold, because one, they want to know if it's a real number. Mm-hmm. They want to know if somebody will respond. And once you start responding, then whatever tactic they're going to use, then they're going to take off with it. So you've given them the ability to know that that's a real number, you're a real person. Even if you just question mark, or if you say, sorry, wrong number, you have now told them that that is a real number and there's a real person behind that number. And so that number's now out there and they will give it to everybody else. So it's very important, if a random number texts you and says, can't meet up, or haven't talked to you in a long time, what are you up to? That's one of the ones that we're seeing a lot is something that somebody who you haven't heard from in a long time would text you, but you don't know the number. So you respond with,
Who is this?
Sorry, I've lost your contact. Right. Who is this? And so then they'll start with their scam and whatever scam they're going to
play it out. How do some of these end up like actually ripping people off?
So speaking to what the sheriff was just talking about, these romance scams, yeah. what that might look like is, and it sounds like we've probably all gotten them at one point or another, but it starts with just a completely random text message. You don't know the number. There's the context behind it doesn't make sense. I got one the other day and it was like, "Hi, Bianca, haven't heard from you in a while." If you get that, you respond back, "Sorry, wrong number." Well, now they've got you. Now they can start to engage. So it could be something like, "Oh, sorry, I thought you were Bianca. We met at a function, a party or something." And it's just this conversation that builds. And before you know it, you're having a full-on text conversation with this random person you don't even know. Well, that carries on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And with a small percentage of the, because again, you have to remember, these messages, they're casting a very wide net. And so out of, those thousands and thousands and thousands of text messages, if they can even get one person to now engage with them long enough to build this relationship, well, then it turns to, "Hey, I'd like to meet you. You seem like a really nice person. I'm in, I'm out of the country. I'm in Canada or wherever. Do you think you could help me out with some money so that I could, so that I can meet you?" And again, it's so weird to think about, at the 36,000 foot view, but this happens. And before people know it, they're sending money to, some guy they think is named Joe to fly into Summit County to meet them. But that's just not the case.
Now, are these the victims of this? Are they like having an affair on their spouse, or are they older, maybe single, lonely?
It's all across the board.
And have you seen successful ones of that here in Summit County?
Unfortunately,
where the romance is actually ended
up, why we're so glad to be here today and talking about
right.
this. If we can stop one person from doing this, there are people who, and we have cases, I talk to our investigations unit regularly, and there are cases of people sending thousands of dollars to people who they've never met, they've never seen. If we can just stop one person from doing this, we would like to stop everybody from doing this. But I think it's really important that we're talking about this today. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. And we'll give you some more things to look for. And hopefully everyone listening can spread the word and so that this just stops happening. Because it's hard to get your money back. It's almost impossible to get your money back because you're not doing it in a way that we can follow it. And so, there was a case recently, $6,000. And that's a lot of money. That's hard-earned money that, mm-hmm. Is going to people who don't deserve it. And so we wanted to stop this.
I imagine a lot of people send money across the country to different people. Otherwise, this wouldn't be a successful scam.
Right. Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, it's so easy, for me or you to look at that text message and say, "Oh, well, it's a scam."
Yeah.
And I think the majority of people, they do recognize it as a scam and they don't respond. But there is a small percentage that are falling victim. So, this is one of those things where education is going to be our best tool against this. Unfortunately, this isn't, we can't send deputies out and create, like a speed trap, sort of.
Phone trap.
Yeah, this is just an issue that is, it's too far spread. And I think that as a community, we need to realize that education is really the best way that we're going to combat this.
Yeah. So now you mentioned that you've gotten one of these texts. Have other people in the sheriff's department received these? And has anyone?
Ironically enough, and it's probably, if not daily, weekly, I will have one of our own lieutenants, captains, or deputies. It's mostly our lieutenants and captains come and say, "Hey, I got a phone call from myself." So, and I said, "Oh," and they're like, "Yeah, there's a warrant out for my arrest, and I need to pay it." And they got it from themselves.
Okay, third category. Any more that you want to highlight, Scott?
You know, the cryptocurrency is always a big one, and that seems to kind of ebb and flow a little bit. Anything with crypto, if you're talking to someone that you don't know and they use the word cryptocurrency, they use the word Bitcoin, hang up.
Okay.
Just hang up. You know, don't even engage. Don't try and find out, you know, more information. Just hang up. And really, that goes for all of these scams.
Yeah.
Because, again, like we were talking, the biggest thing and the biggest way to get into trouble is to continue the conversation. You know, and even on those text messages, even saying, you know, being polite, hey, you've got the wrong number, that's a mistake. Just delete it.
Just block it.
Yep, delete it, report it as junk.
So we have the body of the scam. We have how they get our numbers. Now, the solution, there basically isn't one. If they're out of the country, your hands are tied.
They really are. And, you know, again, that's why these are particularly frustrating for law enforcement, because after the crime has been committed, there's not a lot that law enforcement can do. These are very sophisticated scams. And when you lose your money, it's hard, number one, to trace, you know, who done it. It's hard to figure that part out. And then additionally, even if we were able to say, okay, this is the person that did it, well, trying to prosecute that is going to be a whole nother thing, that, you know, figuring out jurisdiction. Well, if it happened outside of the country, that's going to be a tough one for, you know, our local prosecutors to prosecute someone, you know, in Africa for a crime.
And yeah, it's a misdemeanor or something. So
it depends on the money amount. Yeah. It depends on the denomination. But, you know, and we do have a lot of investigative techniques. But what we're seeing is, and the ones that we can trace, that money is out of the country in less than 24 hours. So that's the unfortunate part. And if you're using these cryptocurrency, or you're using the Apple cards and you're scratching, I mean, that's the biggest red flag of them all, is you're going out, you're buying these cards that they're telling you to buy, then you're scratching it off and you're giving them the code. That's a huge red flag. It should be a huge red flag for anyone, because they're not having you send them. The other thing is going, you know, to Western Union and sending something, and they're on the phone. They're saying it's urgent. Urgency is the biggest thing in this. They want you not to think.
Yeah,
and so the biggest thing for you to do is stop. Just stop and try to make sense of it. Just trust your gut. Pause, verify. Don't act under pressure.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing that you can do. And one of the things that we want to do in the sheriff's office, and one of my goals, is to have an initiative where we have the ability that anybody who's having this happen to them, we have an email that you can report this to. You don't have to have a report. We don't have to take a report on it. We're going to have some type of system in place that you can call, and we can tell you right then and there to verify it. And that's something that anyone in the public can say is, and I would encourage them to say is, you know what, wait a second. I'm going to make a phone call and I'm going to see if you're a scam.
Yeah. And you can totally say that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can say that. I want to make a phone call. If you're real, then I'll call you back. Give me a number to call you back. Or don't do anything until you verify it. And we're going to have, we're in the middle of getting it going. We're going to have a phone number. We're going to have email where you guys, anybody in the public, can call and verify. And we will tell you, we will have somebody live that you can tell them your circumstance. We can come to your house. You can come to the sheriff's office, and we will tell you if this is legitimate or not, because we need to end this, and people need to stop losing their money.
Well, imagine we can make our phones only ring through numbers in our contacts. Must be something in the settings.
Yeah. I believe that is a setting. I know iPhones have it. I'm not an Android guy, but yeah. I assume they probably have such things. one thing real quick that I'll mention, and this is something I've only seen a few times, but we've talked about getting the phone call and someone saying, hey, you have a warrant, and that's sort of it. And, you know, you can either believe you have a warrant or you cannot. One thing that I saw, I had a deputy reach out to me a few months ago, but she said, hey, we should get some information out to the public, because this person actually got an emailed warrant. They were on the phone with someone. Right. They said, I don't believe you. I don't think I have a warrant. Show me the warrant. So the scammer actually emailed what in their mind was a warrant. And I had this deputy send me, because I was curious. I said, well, send me the warrant. I want to see it.
That's right.
And, you know, this is certainly not to be disparaging to the victim of this, because they don't know what a warrant looks like, and I wouldn't expect them to. But I will say, I looked at the warrant for about 2 seconds and just started laughing, because it was so obvious to me that it was fake. And I think what the sheriff said is important, that we can't expect the community at large to have the same in-depth sort of knowledge that we have. So if there's ever a question, let us know. Give us a call. We're going to make this email and phone number available to the public. If there's a question, give us a call. You know, I've taken hundreds of these reports, when I was a road deputy, and I can tell you, I don't think that there was one person that I ever talked to that did not tell me something along the lines of, I knew it was a scam. I could feel it in my gut. I shouldn't have talked to him. That's common across the board. Mm-hmm. So I just want to highlight again, if you see those red flags, if you hear those red flags, don't even continue the conversation. Just hang up.
Now, is all this information on the Summit County Sheriff's Department website?
It's going to be.
It's going to be. Good.
So this is something you're planning in the next few weeks, months?
Good. Weeks.
Weeks.
Great.
Joey, if they get a call like this and actually pick it up or text, they can go to the website. Will there be a copy of what a real warrant looks like?
You know,
web person.
We're still building this out, so I don't know exactly what it's going to look like. This is, I think the idea behind this is more of, we want to give a resource. So if there's a question, hey, we'll come look at the warrant. We'll, send us a picture of the warrant.
Yeah.
We can tell you, that's legit, or no, that's a total fake. Because I'll tell you, this warrant that I looked at, I was like blown away. I think in the scammer's mind, they did a pretty good job, because there were names of actual judges that are here locally. There were names of actual courts, but none of it lined up. Like, it was a third district judge out of Matheson Courthouse in Salt Lake with the name or the phone number of a Park City court. So
and just the way the warrant looked was a little off. But the general public doesn't know that.
Yeah. Just if we've never had a warrant,
exactly,
we wouldn't know what it looked like.
Well, most people don't see warrants, right? Oh. We do.
Yeah. Oh.
And most people don't know that warrants only are effective when they're personally served.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's true.
Warrants aren't, I don't think a valid warrant service is email.
No.
I could be wrong. No, I've never served a warrant via email.
I mean, that's where you get served a warrant. Okay. Email it to you, and you take it out of your printer.
I don't think that's the direction we're going.
I don't think so either.
Well, we've been having a conversation with Sheriff Casey Bates and Skylar Talbot of the Summit County Sheriff's Department, talking about scams, and we look forward to your new resource that I know you're going to be putting up soon. When that happens, we will also post that on our website, so people will have access to it. Thanks for spending time with us. We'll be right
Thanks
back.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this. Joel Zuckerman is a man who believes in the power of gratitude. Not only the casual expression of thanks in day-to-day life, but the power that comes from the thoughtful expression of appreciation to those who have helped us through life. His latest book is titled Gratitude Tiger. We're grateful that he has joined us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning. I like how you did that, Rod. You're very clever.
Thanks for being here. Well, let's start by hearing a little about your background and the arc that led you to the focus on gratitude.
Since time is short on live radio, I wrote a letter of gratitude in November of 2013, coming up on 12 years ago. I read about it in a book. When I wrote the letter of gratitude, it never occurred to me I would write a second letter. It was an intellectual exercise. I had written 7 or 8 books by then. I was a pretty prolific freelance writer. But when I put that letter in the mail to someone who had helped me along my path, I was struck with this warmth and connectivity that surprised me, and I found the feeling intoxicating, which is now, 12 years later, I'm coming up on 300 letters of gratitude written and sent to people from my present, my past, people that are very close to me, people that had a transactional effect on my life, and every letter I write, I assume the recipient is elated and humbled and flattered to get it, But every letter I write primarily for myself. That's the secret.
So let's back up a little bit. So you read something in a book and said, I'm going to write this letter. How long did it take you to get started on that letter? Did you know who it was going to be to, how you were going to start it?
I've had so many interviews, and no one has ever asked that question. And now a little window into my soul. I read about it in the morning in a very famous self-help book. You guys and everyone who's listening have probably heard of Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and it's all small stuff. The chapter was called Write a Heartfelt Letter, and I wrote it that day. I looked at it and go, I can write a heartfelt letter. I'm a writer. I do interviews and histories and travelogues and course reviews and restaurants. I can write a heartfelt letter. I thought of who I wanted to write to, a colleague in the business. I was in the golf business for many years, and someone was very helpful to me for many years in that business. And I wrote him my first letter of gratitude, as I said, not thinking I would ever write a second letter until I put it in the mail and I went, wow. In a couple of days, this guy is going to get this thing out of the blue, and it's going to stop him in his tracks at least for an hour. And like I said, it was addictive, and now I've done it nearly 300 times.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with it. So how long did it, so in case listeners are like, oh, I can't do that. It's going to take me forever to write the letter. How long did it take you to, from the moment you started it, and did you do it in pen and paper, or did it look like a business letter?
Another great question. You're moving up in the world. I think you're going to be on NPR before too long, Kevin, with these questions. I put it on the word processor, which was a godsend, because when I wrote the letter, I never knew I would write two books about gratitude and become a professional speaker who works for nonprofits and wellness resorts and corporate events. I have this incredible archive now of 290-something letters. I know what I wrote, to who, and when. So if they were handwritten, none of this would exist. Now, let me make a distinction between a letter of gratitude and a thank you note. Mm-hmm. I wrote a thank you note for a dinner I was at Saturday night, and I put it in the mail this morning. That is a handwritten 5 or 6 sentence thank you for dinner. A letter of gratitude differs from a thank you note in that you are thanking someone for being themselves. You're not thanking them for a gift, a party, an introduction, or a dinner. It's a general discussion of why you are grateful to that person. And luckily for me, all of mine are on the computer.
So flesh that out a little bit. I mean, you're making that distinction between a quick thank you note for a party and a letter of gratitude that speaks more. What kinds of things do you include in one of these letters?
Well, that's a great question. So let's make a distinction. I've been lucky enough in the last 25 years to have written for 120 magazines, including many around our area, whether it's the Park Record or Park City Magazine and Salt Lake Magazine. Words come easily to me, not to mention the 10 books. For people, what's in a letter of gratitude? I don't know. What are you grateful for? Mm-hmm. What has the person done for you? But let me get to the point that Kevin was making a minute ago. Not everyone can sit down and wax rhapsodic on the page. So there's a chapter in my new book, Gratitude Tiger. The chapter is called 7 paragraphs, 7 sentences, 7 words. And in that chapter, I detail the fact that even though I take tremendous pleasure in writing 7-paragraph letters, streams of consciousness, where I go off and on a tangent and talk about something that might have happened in 1986 that the recipient might not remember, you can express profound gratitude in 7 sentences, which is easily understood, but even 7 words. Let me give you a couple of examples. In a business setting, because I know this is mountain money. You have an employee that's doing a great job, and you don't have to write it. You can text, Slack, interoffice communication, email. You are the cog in the machine. This department would not run without you. It's taking you as long to text that as it took me to say it. Mm-hmm. But you are going to empower that employee who is going to be blown away that the boss or the supervisor or the owner is showing them that type of reverence. And by the way, a quick segue, Deloitte Consulting tells us that now that baby boomers are exiting stage left,
and most of the workforce are millennials and Gen Z, do you know what their number one concern is in the employment space? Can you guys even guess?
Being appreciated.
Well, 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 you continue to impress me, sir. Being seen, valued, and appreciated is number one for millennials and Gen Z. It blew me away to learn this because when I came into the workforce just a mere 40-something years ago, your number one concern was salary. And by the way, you couldn't mention it the first interview or even the second, but number two was how much vacation time in this job. But the worm has turned, and being seen, valued, and appreciated is number one for Gen Z and millennials, and that's giving them a shot of gratitude when you share some positive feeling, some positive feedback with your employees.
And it has to be genuine.
Has to be genuine. And by the way, not every employee is the Shohei Ohtani of their industry. So someone said to me at a speaking engagement, I speak with at YPO, Young Presidents Organization, and these guys have, many of them, highly successful. Someone said to me, Joel, what if someone is not the cog in the machine? What if someone is not the most important person? How do you express gratitude in seven words? And by the way, seven words is just a mnemonic I use. It can be a sentence. You can say, you are really making progress. Keep up the good work. Boom. Hit someone with that. And, you know, where I speak to audiences, I say, raise your hand if you have a problem with employee retention. Mm-hmm. Half the room raises their hand. I say, no, you don't. You have a problem with employee defection. Okay? Mm-hmm. Retention is not your problem. So showing gratitude to your employee is a way of engendering a little bit of loyalty, maybe keeping them in the fold a little bit longer, building morale, and it's easy to do and it doesn't cost you a penny.
So if, when you talk to CEOs, you can almost tell them, hey, first thing in the morning, first thing you do is you send an email to one of your employees, a different one, you know, just comes up on the Rolodex, but you know.
Yeah, and you're showing the miles on your odometer.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, just send them some quick 7-sentence email of gratitude.
Even 7 words.
Seven words.
I want to get back. I want to talk a little bit more about what's in the book. But first, I want to ask this question. I'm sitting here spinning, and I have a few miles on my odometer as well. About 300 people that in your life you felt the need or the desire to express gratitude. That's a big number.
Here's the word I use, Roger. Compulsion. There's a chapter in the new book called Obligation versus Compulsion. A thank you note, if you're from polite society, weren't raised by wolves, is something of an obligation. I was invited to dinner, as I said the other night. A couple I don't know that well, they were kind enough to have us over. I was compelled to write them a thank you note, 6 or 7 sentences, to prove to them I wasn't raised by wolves.
I was.
A letter of, but you could also text.
But you can fake it. It's
you
okay.
Can, hey, Kevin, you can text it. You can email it. You can even have a phone call the next day. A letter of gratitude, by comparison, is a compulsion. It's not an obligation. So, Roger, you're asking, you know, where do these people come from?
Yeah.
I don't know. You can hear in 5 minutes on the radio. I've just got a lot to say. So first of all, I try to, you know, heed Don Corleone's advice, keep my friends close and my enemies closer. So I've got friends from grade school, high school, college, Wall Street. I used to be an ultimate Frisbee player. I still have friends from the 80s. Savannah, Georgia, where I lived for 20 years. The golf industry, where I spent 20 years. There have been no letters received with any type of quantity beyond Park City. I'm sure I've written 40 letters to people in and around Park City and Salt Lake. It's as long as people continue to show me a kindness, do me a service, provide a moment of levity or help or assistance, I reach out to them to get back to the first point. I do it because it makes me feel good. They get the letter. I call that collateral joy. Mm-hmm. They get the letter. They're like, wow, look at this. Theoretically, it makes their day. But I didn't write it for them. I wrote it for myself.
How often do you get a reply?
There's a chapter in the new book titled, Acknowledge You Probably Won't Be Acknowledged. And let me give you and your audience a vocabulary word that will set you apart. Doxophobia. If you are doxophobic, you're afraid of being praised. I've received about 60 to 80 responses on 290 letters, about 30%. Mm-hmm. And someone said to me recently, I think it's imposter syndrome. People don't feel they deserve to be praised. But why use a $5 word when you can use a $10 word? I prefer doxophobia, the fear of being praised. And I think people don't like to expose their feelings or talk in a intimate fashion. I send a letter, and these letters are not ooey-gooey. They're not Hallmark cards. Right. But for whatever reason it is, and I've racked my brain about it for a decade, most people do not acknowledge receiving the letter, but you have to write the letter for your own sake. You have to put good out in the world, and that's it. Whatever comes back to you is just gravy.
Yeah, so on the responses, have you noticed, is it generational at all? Because we were just talking about differences in the generations.
I've never thought about it. Unlike the letters, which are obsessively collated and organized, I do not have a notebook of grievances and who has thanked me or not. So I can't answer that off the top of my head.
Joel, as we're getting near the end here, I do want to talk a little more about the book. Why did you write this book, and what does it cover?
Gratitude. So most people write a book and then start speaking about the subject within. I'm a professional speaker talking about gratitude. My keynote is called The Seven Pillars of Expressive Gratitude. And then a wise person in my circle said, you need to write a book so meeting planners who have no idea who you are, and if they Google you and 100 hits come up on golf writing, which is something I did, but not something I do, meeting planners who might want to book you or heads of nonprofits can know your philosophy. So that's why I wrote the book Gratitude Tiger. Tiger's an acronym. It means tapping into gratitude engenders rewards. If you are willing to tap into gratitude, which surrounds all of us every day, you will be rewarded. In my world, the ultimate manifestation of tapping into gratitude is writing letters of gratitude to people who have helped you on your path.
Excellent. Raj, any more questions?
I have many more questions, but I don't have much more time. So we've been speaking with Joel Zuckerman about his latest book, Gratitude Tiger, and about the power of gratitude in general and the power of gratitude by letter writing in particular. Joel, thanks for spending so much time with us this morning.
Guys, I'm really grateful, that I came in and spoke about this subject, which everyone can benefit from, particularly now that Thanksgiving is around the corner.
And Gratitude Tiger is available on Amazon.
Amazon, Dolly's, Barnes & Noble, wherever fine books are sold.
All right. Thank you, Joel. We'll be right back after this.
Okay, listeners, do you think you can combine technology with your workout? Sure, right? How about adding some science and an expert coach? You can now. SmartFit Method is opening in Kimball Junction. Actually, their grand opening is on Wednesday, 10/22. We're lucky to have one of their founders with us in studio, Connor Darnborough. Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So now, what inspired the creation of SmartFit Method, and what gap, if any, was in the fitness or health market that you were aiming to fill?
Yeah, so about 80% of the population doesn't hit the minimum dose of exercise. And that was really the gap that I was trying to fill when we started this, is how do we make the fitness solution, the recovery solution, accessible to the majority of the population? Because it's all fine and dandy to, you know, work out 2 hours a day, and a lot of people, you know, will try and do things like that. And it's very unlikely that those people stick with that regimen. So I was looking, how do we make exercise more efficient, more effective, and then more measurable, so people actually knew that they were making progress, which leads to consistency.
Was there anything in your personal workout that motivated you?
Yeah, so it's a father-son-owned company. My father and I started this together. I approached him about 4 years ago to start this, and both him and I had pretty severe health challenges. My dad had an enlarged aortic valve, which was close to rupture.
That's a serious health problem.
Serious health problem. If he lifted over 30 pounds, the doctor said he might die. And then I had a significant amount of injuries from competing and skiing, and we were both overtraining, right? way, way overtraining, which developed a lot of those injuries and illnesses. And we were just looking for a better way. And that's what personally motivated me to start looking into this technology as a solution to myself and my family.
So kind of, you say you started this company with your father. Do you guys have other locations in Utah already? Where does this fit into the development of the company?
Yeah, so this is our first expand. So we're both from Canada. We went to San Diego to open our first studios. Mm-hmm. And pretty quickly, we wanted to get back into the mountains. And we came back out here to Utah.
So this will be your second?
So this is the second state that we've expanded into. And we just came here 6 months ago. So we opened one in Mill Creek in Salt Lake City a few months ago, and now we're opening Park City.
Gotcha. Now, what's the value proposition to clients?
Yeah. Well, the workouts are super efficient.
Okay.
They're typically 20 to 30 minute workouts. All the data is measured, so you can actually see in real time every workout. Are you improving your strength? Are you improving your cardiovascular system? Are you improving internal health factors as well? We do a ton of assessments for our members to help quantify that. You also have a personal trainer with you every time you come in. So you have an expert who's guiding you through the different types of equipment. And then we also have a recovery benefit as well. So you're coming in, you're doing 20, 30, super efficient workout that gets you results. And then after that, we're pairing it with appropriate recovery. We have things like red light therapy, hydrogen therapy, saunas, cold plunges, vibration plates, you name it, in our studio to help people respond from that stimulus they're getting during exercise.
Well, I understand all the other things, but what is a vibration plate?
So that's on one of our machines. We have a micro impact vibration plate that also has hydrogen therapy and red light on that machine. And what the micro impact vibration plate does is it helps with stem cell production, which we naturally lose after 30. It's also really important for bone density. So anyone who's struggling with osteopenia or osteoporosis can be very helpful for that. And then also helps with your lymphatic system, which is very important for your immune health.
So 20 to 30 minutes is not a super long workout. Can you explain to us how you managed to get, you know, a lot of benefit out of a workout that is that short, and sort of walk us through what a typical workout might look like?
Yeah, so great question. So yeah, typically in a gym to get the results on a strength training workout, most people are working out an hour into an hour and a half. And what really, when you look at the body, causes a stimulus, which is increase of, you know, we increase strength from that, we increase muscle growth from that. It's time under tension. So this is for the strength training workouts we do. What we focus on is how do we get more time under tension? So we slow the movement down a little bit. Mm-hmm. We make sure that each range of motion is properly loaded so that instead of saying, okay, I'm gonna go to the gym and I'm gonna press 100 pounds out and resist 100 pounds down, the weight's actually going to adapt to you through the technology while you're lifting it. So you might start with 100 pounds being your weakest point, and then as you get a little further out, it might be 121, 132, 135. And it's going to adapt to you the entire time you're in that movement. So there's a lot of efficiencies in that. You're properly loaded, so you're never overloaded, but you're also not underloaded. So good safety aspect. And really what we do is we look at, okay, what are the foundations of exercise? What do we have to do to move the needle? And then how do we utilize technology? And things like adapting the range of, you know, making sure that your proper range of motion is set, making sure the weight's adjusting on that to get those results.
So let's take something like a bicep curl.
Yeah.
Let's say someone's going to curl 25-pound dumbbells each arm. Mm-hmm. So the machine would start at a specific weight, but then when the power curve changes, it would increase and decrease.
Exactly.
But does it also give me the tension on the way down?
It does. So that's a very important phase that you mentioned. That's called the eccentric phase, when you're resisting the weight back down on a bicep curl, and that's where most muscle growth occurs. So it'll start at 25 as you go up to the midpoint of a bicep curl. It might be at 40, right, for that power curve you're referencing. And then as you get to the top, it might come back down a little bit, maybe let's say 35 again. And then as you start to resist it, the weight might go up to 60. So it's really adjusting at every second of that power curve.
Okay, so a lot of our listeners are athletes, you know, here in Park City. What if someone is, they haven't worked out in 10, 15 years? Is this something for them, or should they start with 8-pound dumbbells at home or something?
So I think what's awesome about what we started, my father and I, is we both come from a competitive athletic background, but we both dealt with health circumstances that caused us to not be able to exercise the way we wanted to. So we had to come back from a bunch of injuries and health problems. And then as we graduated from that, train to what we, you know, wanted to compete in. So what's cool about our studios, and because the equipment is so adaptive, is I can work with a 96-year-old lady who's coming off a numerous amount of health conditions, or I can work with a 30-year-old professional athlete. The equipment is that adaptive.
So another thing that people tends to happen to people in their workout routines is they tend to fall into a rut. They do the same thing over and over again, and not much seems to happen. Talk to us about how you inject variety into the workouts so as to create a balanced sort of progress. And is that something that your trainers track?
Yeah, so we do, when you first come in, we do a whole bunch of health assessments to figure out what a personalized program is for you. So it's not this one-size-fits-all approach. It's really looking at the equipment we offer and how we can utilize those different pieces of equipment to benefit you. We have weekly checkpoints, monthly checkpoints, and quarterly checkpoints. At each of these checkpoints, based on your progress, we're going to adjust the routine that you're doing so that it's net, because your goals when you come in might be different than 3 months later. Mm-hmm. So we're always adjusting the routine to what our clients' goals are and then showing them the results they're getting. We have, for example, for 20, 30-minute workouts, I think it's pretty impressive. We have a 70% increase of strength in our members over 1 year. So that's one of the key stats. We also have a 19% VO2 max increase, which is a cardiovascular increase, over 6 months. So our members do get a lot of results. We show them those results, and then we adjust the program to them.
Now, your trainers have to be obviously knowledgeable in physiology and weight training. Now they have to have a whole new world in tech. Mm-hmm. Is that difficult to find employees?
So we use an adage in our company that Frank Sinatra didn't move pianos. He stood on the X and he sang. And we have a whole tech team that basically moves the pianos so that our trainers can stand on the X and sing. When you come in, our trainers are 100% focused on you. The technology is all automated through the background to help deliver that good experience. So,
is there AI involved in?
There is AI involved in some of the technology. Some of it's software-based, some of it's AI-based. But yeah, we're utilizing quite a bit of that.
And going back to sort of what I was trying to get at before, will I see different workouts? And let's say I'm going to come in 3 times a week. Will I have different workouts for each of those so as to move around? Because again, with a 20 to 30 minute interval, I would think that it would be hard to get in cardio and strength and abs and biceps and legs.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, each time you come in, you're probably going to use a different machine. And then we also have multiple different protocols on each machine. So if you're doing a strength training workout, we might do an upper body, a lower body split. For cardiovascular, we're going to probably do some intervals where we're trying to build your VO2 max or aerobic capacity, but we're also probably going to do some base work in the studio as well, for build aerobic base. And there's quite a bit of variety. We try to do it over 12-week cycles, so each week you'll have kind of a different routine, but we're also making sure that there is some consistency to it so that you get results.
And is your typical workout pattern like 3 times a week? I mean, what do most of your clients end up doing?
Yeah, two to five times a week mm-hmm. is what we typically see. And that is very much based on what their goals are and their time availability. But I can get people results in 2 times a week as well.
5 times a week. So the recovery is better than just going to a gym and moving plates around?
Yeah, so we do 5 times a week, and that will be a combination of strength training, cardiovascular training, recovery integrated into that as well. So 5 sessions a week, but we're not making people lift weights 5 times a week necessarily.
How big is the facility, and how many pieces of equipment do you typically use in the workout side?
Yeah, so it's a few thousand square feet. We probably have 12 different machines in there. All have different benefits, whether it's mobility, strength, cardiovascular training, recovery, and usually I use 1 to 2 pieces of equipment each time you come in. Okay. And it's usually a 20 to 30 minute workout followed by about a 15 to 20 minute recovery session.
And now, what's the biggest hurdle you and your dad had to clear when you started this business?
I mean, we're definitely in a deceptive to disruptive phase. So this, you know, the fitness industry is, you know, you go 100 years ago, people are still curling dumbbells, right? So integrating technology, even though it's integrating every other area of our life, integrating technology into fitness, there's kind of the adage of like too good to be true, right? How is this actually going to be better than my, you know, swinging a kettlebell or, you know, flipping tires or whatever it may be that person does? And, you know, the way we overcame that is through measuring data. In the second year, we started doing a bunch of assessments. And once people actually start seeing, okay, my strength's improving this much, my body composition's improving this much, my internal health factors, you know, my blood work, all that type of stuff is also improving, it validates what we do.
what's the financial model? Well, the listeners are now going to wonder, okay, is this a subscription product? How does it work?
Yeah, so it's primarily a subscription product. So we do month-to-month memberships. We also do have packs available for people as well if they're just traveling or they're not maybe going on vacation through the summer and they want to still be able to come in while they're here. But typically, we do month-to-month memberships.
Yeah, and if you could talk to yourself, your four years ago self, and give yourself a little bit of advice of what you've learned, what would that piece of advice be?
Oh, man. yeah, I would probably tell myself to align my intention to my vision. I think that when I started it, I had the same vision I do today. And I think over the 4 years, I made certain mistakes where I started to go off really what my intention was towards my vision. So I would say to always keep my vision, front and center and make sure that the actions I'm taking line up with that.
Yeah, so the subscription is monthly, you said?
It's monthly, yeah.
And what's that run someone?
So the core membership's about $300 a month. We have, annual commitments, month-to-month commitments, but it's about $300 a month. And then we have a premium offering that's $450 per month. We do have different incentives, when people come in. The best way to experience us is to do a complimentary session. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a baseline assessment, let you try out some of the workouts and recovery, and then we can go through the different membership models. We also have a bunch of flex packs, so if the membership models don't work for someone, we can adjust it.
And you're over by the Taco Bell in Kimball Junction?
Yeah, unfortunately, right next to Taco Bell. Yeah.
that would be one way to recover, I suppose.
Yeah, no, we have to, as trainers, herd people away from there.
Okay, we've been speaking with Connor Dombro of SmartFit Method. What's your website?
Our website's smartfitmethod.com, and come check us out at our grand opening on October 22nd. That's this Wednesday from 3:30 p.m. till 7 p.m. We're going to have food and drinks there from Salt Box. We're also going to have we're going to raise some funds for Live Like Sam.
Okay. Awesome.
We'd also like to thank our guests. This morning, we started our hour by speaking with Casey Bates and Sergeant Skyler Talbert of the Summit County Sheriff's Department. We talked to Joel Zuckerman about gratitude, and we just wrapped the show by speaking with Connor Darnbro of Smart Fifth Method. You're listening to KPCW.